One of the meetings that I've been to recently in Tallahassee was the joint meeting between the Florida School Board Association, the League of Cities, and League of Counties. And if you recall, last year we had a Keep It Local campaign that just focused on school board members. Well, when we met with the League of Cities and Counties, we asked them if they would venture with us in on this. So we created a new public service announcement that includes not only school board members, but mayors and commissioners, and we have it queued up ready. This is the draft cut. It still needs to be polished, but I wanted you all to be aware of it so that when it hits the TV, that you already know it's out there.
Yes, ma'am.
There will be questions afterwards.
So this is in conjunction with the Keep It Local message that we're giving our legislators and Congress.
I'm an Orange County commissioner.
Bob Abgar.
I'm Jerry Taylor.
My name is Nick Mallon.
I'm Grady Johnson, commissioner for Hardee County.
Imagine that your neighbor buys himself a boat.
Then he decides it's time to trim back on his household budget.
So we ask you to pay the bill for him.
That wouldn't be fair, would it?
But it happens all the time in Washington. When Washington can't balance their budget, they ask state government to pay the bill.
Unfortunately, sometimes Tallahassee does the same thing to local governments.
When it happens, it's called an unfunded mandate.
It hurts Florida's towns and taxpayers just as much as a tax hike.
In tough times, it makes sense for state lawmakers to trim the budget.
But if they just roll costs down to local communities,
are they really doing taxpayers any favors?
Not the taxpayers of Gulf County.
Not the taxpayers of Drought.
And not the taxpayers of Altamont Springs either.
You see, Florida is a big state.
Its hundreds of communities have unique needs.
That's why we elect mayors, commissioners, and school board members.
I'm proud to serve Clay County.
I'm proud to serve Lee County,
Orange County,
the city of Hopper.
I am proud to serve the people of Charlotte County.
Because I live here too.
Because I live here too.
But costly, unfunded mandates represent an inflexible, one-size-fits-all approach.
And unfunded mandates are never unfunded for long. Ultimately, the taxpayers get stuck with the bill.
In the form of higher property taxes and fees.
Voters are calling for more accountability from government.
And government closest to the people is also the most accountable to the people.
It's time for a new era of home rule.
This year, ask your state legislator to do the right thing.
Do the right thing.
Do the right thing.
Keep Florida local.
And say no.
Say no.
Say no to new mandates.
It's a joint effort so that we're all going to Tallahassee and we're all going to Washington with the same message. The decisions need to be made closest to the people that they serve, and there must be funding attached to any directive that comes from our government.
Good. Well done. Now, where and when is this going to be?
Well, Ryan Hulk is doing the production of it, and he's in the polishing phase of it now, so it should be hitting television stations within the next couple of weeks.
Wonderful. And can you remind us who's putting this together again?
This is Florida School Board Association, Joint League of Counties, and Joint League of Cities. Yeah. And, you know, we had that question when I was headed to that meeting. Were mayors and county commissions looking to take over school boards in Florida? And while that's true in other parts of the country, it is absolutely not true in Florida. So we don't have that as another piece of the puzzle that we're juggling.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Thank you.
That was great. Good job.
Yes.
Very, very good. All right, should we have the superintendent's evaluation instrument. Should we do that after? We have some people here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then we can finish up with the evaluation instrument, maybe.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'm not sure.
Then it's my turn?
Is it your turn?
I'll look at the agenda.
We'll do that, yeah.
I'm looking at the agenda.
Your turn.
Okay. First thing, I have several issues today. First thing on my list is this is for Dr. Adams, and Mr. McCain, if you'd be so kind as to give that to Ms. Stang so she has a copy for our records. At the direction of the the chairman, who is very good at delegating.
You think it was McCain?
Well, I think he set a precedent here, so... I did check on several names that were given for possible facilitators for our goals workshop, and I think this is one that wasn't given to me. Actually, I spoke with someone else whose name had come up, and I've actually put her as a reference at the bottom. That's for Carrie Bartlett, and her phone number. She's with the Indian River Community Foundation. She is very willing to speak to any board members who have any questions regarding Mr. Higgins. I spent about an hour with Mr. Higgins. I will tell you, he's very enthusiastic, very high on education. He has some unique credentials, and I think I've mentioned before, he actually is involved in, I think currently in Pennsylvania, with a group that is looking to get philanthropic infusion of funds into public schools. Hmm. So he has a very different perspective. He does have two children in our schools here. Because he came from a larger metropolitan area, he did start off with his children in private school, but quickly added their names to one of our magnets, and we were completely through with our discussion and interview before he ever shared with me anything about his family or anything like that. He's a very, very, I was very impressed. I think his energy and his experience, we will benefit greatly with those. I did send his information to the chairman. I forwarded it as soon as I received it. He has cleared the date for us for March the 5th. That's one of the dates that you all gave me, so that is the only date that fits his schedule, and actually he flies out that evening. So he's a busy man, but he is very dedicated to public education and is happy that he's able to participate in public education in our county, which was not the case in the large Metropolitan area he came from. So if you have any questions, I don't have the authority to do that. It needs to be the board's decision, or at least some sort of a consensus. I know Mr. Pegler seems to feel he should move forward, and that's why it's being brought to you right now today.
So he's going to facilitate the discussion on
goals.
On goals. Okay.
Right.
And also on the.
Once the strategic plan is set up, if we need him to come back in,
okay.
He's very willing. And this is at no charge. I mean, we need to make certain people understand. There's no cost to us. As Ms. Disney knows, when we did this before, and I think all of us, except for Mr. Pegler, were here, we did a little gift card to the person, and we paid for that ourselves. That did not come out of any taxpayer funds. We did that ourselves because we were pleased. And I jokingly told him that that's the only thing, but he had to do a really, really, really good job for us for him to get that. So.
Oh, I know the other thing I wanted to know. What about the SWOT analysis? Are we interested in doing
that? We talked about that briefly. Now, as you can see, he is CFRE, so he is accredited, and he has done that. He didn't feel that right now, if we were looking at goals, that we really needed to be doing that. It's something we may want to do later. At a later time, and he would be more than willing to participate in that. He's happy to give his time because, as I said, he does have children in the district, but, you know, it has to work in with what his real job is. So, but, no, we did briefly talk about doing the SWOT analysis, but because, Ms. Disney, it's very different than when we first got on the board. It was just different.
Right.
So, and he's very happy to do that if at some point we want to do that. So,
thank you.
But that was not the focus or the direction from the chair. So, although I mentioned it, that was not the focus.
So is everybody okay with Mr. Higgins?
No concern.
Okay. And we were going to do that on March the 5th. At what time?
I did have that. I apologize. I think it's in the afternoon, and you know, I
thought that was 12:30 to 4.
That's okay. Right. 12:33, I thought it was. 12:33.
Somewhere in that ballpark.
Somewhere in there. And it, I'm not sure what his flight times and all of that are, but the 12:30 to 3 is what we had. And I think because of the time, Miss Disney is the reason that we didn't go into anything else for that.
Understand.
Thank you very much for doing that, Mrs. Johnson.
I was more than happy. It was interesting at the number of no's we got because of scheduling conflicts, not because they were not interested.
And you want somebody objective also to come in and really talk to us. So that was great. Thanks. Mr. McCain?
Hi. This isn't really an issue, but I did have a question I figured I'd bring up now because I've been getting a lot of inquiries about it. Where does the calendar stand right now?
It's on the agenda tonight.
Oh, excuse me.
Actually, we put it on late, Mr. McCain, so that's probably why. We put it on Friday, but it's actually on. The calendar committee brought it to us the evening that it goes on the agenda, so we weren't able to get it out that day, but they requested that, if it was possible to get us on. Everybody's waiting for it, so it's out there tonight.
Yeah, I've been getting calls.
Yeah. And the other thing I will tell you is that the calendar committee has made a decision to reconvene in March to look ahead. So, if we can not wait until February to have a calendar for the following year. So they are agreeing to that and are going to reconvene in March of this year to start looking ahead.
Ms. Jimenez.
Yes, Mr. Pegler.
Your turn.
Yes, the first item I have is the benchmark test, and I put this on the agenda. It seems like we haven't met in forever, quite a few weeks ago after the last board meeting, because, this is not really just about the benchmark test. It really is about how we handle citizen input and how we realize that when citizen input is given, to maintain the integrity of the work that we do, we don't engage in a back-and-forth response because everybody is entitled to voice their opinions and their concerns about the numerous issues in our school district. But after that meeting, I know how our district works so hard to comply with students' accommodations and students' needs, and I felt that I would be remiss if I didn't take the opportunity in a public venue to reinforce that. And there were some comments that were made that were not very accurate, and I think that this could be a venue where we clarify those types of comments. And it's not intended to be a back and forth. I just think sometimes statements need to be made about what is actually happening versus perceptions, because that's where we can have conflict. So there were comments made about accommodations not being made for a student that I think should be clarified. And there were also comments made about a violation of the pupil progression plan, which states under the section in middle schools that no exam should be administered to sixth graders. So I had talked to Dr. Adams about it, and I had wanted to use our roundtable as a venue to clarify those statements.
Okay. And one of the things that did happen after that is we had our workshop with Curriculum and Instruction, and remember they did a good job of kind of giving us background information about how the benchmarks assessments all come together and all of the various work that's done. Number one, we want to assure our parents that the children that need accommodations are receiving accommodations, whether they're an ESC student, a 504, and that's on the benchmark assessments as well. It's any assessment that they're taking, and you're required to provide the appropriate accommodations. And then the other thing I think was confusing was on the sixth grade exam. And this was at the request of teachers, sixth grade teachers to have, science teachers to have a common exam. So the common exam was developed, but it was up to the teacher to decide if they wanted to use it or grade it. They did not have to use it for a grade, but we're kind of getting to that point where we're having all of these different tests, so it's important to know how you compare with the rest of the district and making sure that we're hitting all of the benchmarks. So it's really at teacher request that that assessment was put out there, but it was not, there was no place on the report card actually to put a final exam because it's not considered a final exam, and it was up to them as to whether they felt that it was appropriate to use as a test grade for that 9 weeks. So it is important that we have the clarification, and you know, sometimes misinformation or misperceptions happen, and we would also like those that have questions about it to call us. You know, be sure to call us so we can give you a straightforward answer as to, well, you know, what those concerns are. More than happy to answer them.
Anybody else? Anything else?
No.
Then we'll go. Just get me again. We'll go back to Mrs. Johnson.
We've had recently several meetings in the county commission offices, and it's prompted some discussion by both those who attend and those who are participants. One of them is that people who have watched the proceedings have noted that. And if you've ever been to any county commission meetings or watched them on television, you know that when people come to speak, they are speaking as they should be to the elected officials who are the ones who are making the decisions. And because of the setup of the room at the county commission, those podiums face the commissioners.
Right.
And years ago, we had actually reconfigured, Miss Disney smiling, we had reconfigured this room to accommodate some additional chairs, and we had moved the podium to the middle at the end of the aisle, and it was changed back because of some political reasons, more than appropriate reasons. They were more political. And I've thought it was time for us to have a discussion, since we have seen how well it has worked for us to have something that encourages people, rather than grandstanding to audiences, for them to be speaking to us, which is their intent. That is, they are here to address the board, not to address a group of people in the audience. It is also when we sometimes televise people who come to the podium. I for years, when the podium used to be on this side of the room, Dr. Adams had a lot of FaceTime. A lot of FaceTime. I mean to tell you, everyone who came up to the seat, she's right there.
I was. No, I was.
Whatever happened to be going on. She had to really have a good FaceTime. She learned that very well. This eliminates all of that. It also, I think, keeps the focus where it should be, which is on the person who is trying to give us input on whether it's testing or accommodations or whatever it happens to be, allows them to be in front of us and for them to be speaking to us. I threw it out there. I did speak briefly with Wiley. I would never have proposed anything. Actually, when we had it previously, we only had two cameras. We now have the three cameras. He said, absolutely no problem. We talked briefly about how we could do some other things. I don't want to micromanage it. I just want to throw out the fact that we did see how well it has worked when it has been set up differently. I believe that our staff, with Ms. Stang, Dr. Adams, and with input from the television crew, we can set up this room to where it is much more accommodating than it currently is. We probably could fit in an awful lot. We could certainly fit in more chairs if the room was set up differently. We still have over here, we still have a sign that says staff. I've moved it a couple of times and put it back there because we don't have staff that ever sits over there. And it always finds its way back to the slot. I don't know. I feel it's not my property. I don't take it with me. I just put it in the back. So, but I think there are some things that can be done. We're going to be in this building. We've made that commitment. We're not doing anything to move anytime soon. I think we may need to make this as customer-friendly as we possibly can, and to keep the intent, which is for input and other opportunities to be to the board members. It's very confusing when people stand to the side as to who their audience is. So it's just something I felt needed to be open for discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I noticed it was particularly evident when we were at the county commission that people were turning back and forth and back and forth like oscillating fans trying to talk to us. So first of all, education for our pastors, that if they address the board, the camera will get their full face and their audience will actually see more of them than when they turn back and forth. But when it comes to the public speaking, we don't have as many grandstanders as we had before, but there are those that deliberately put themselves within the line of the camera. And there probably is a better way to arrange the room so that we don't have as much of that. But also from a security point of view, you know, I know that you've made some changes that are coming up front.
Yes.
Are there any changes being made back here? Because the public does go use the restrooms and the soda machines. So,
But the doors are closed beyond
The
second set of doors are closed, so they don't go back into the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you can go out here, but then there's another set of doors that keep you from going back into the hallway, right?
I can't believe I just noticed.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, they're not.
They're usually during board meetings. Okay.
They have been open.
Haven't paid attention to it.
Okay. And we did have some folks who did wander into the finance area, and the thank goodness our security, our law enforcement gentleman went back and invited them to go out the way they came in. So, which was through the side door.
There is a capability of locking this door as long as people have their keys to that for me or anybody else that's going back through you to get through that second set of doors.
I'm very security conscious. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm reminded of it constantly, you know, when I see the Bay County folks. And just tensions are so high, you know, with the economy the way it is, that I don't think that we can really go overboard when it comes to protecting the building and the data in the building and the privacy of the students and the staff. So.
And the first set of doors is locked, you know.
Yeah.
So people can't come in that way to the board meeting, can't get through that door. But they are in the process of spring break is when Mr. Durrell thinks the changes will actually take place.
Wonderful.
Things have been ordered, and so we think when we come back from spring break that we'll have a door that you have to be buzzed into to get back into the hallway, as well as glass in front of the two receptionists that are in the lobby.
Well, this room could be configured in a safer way than what it currently is, and it would keep the focus on what people are supposed to be doing, which is our business meeting.
So I guess what I would ask is if you have any specific ideas, talk to me about it so we can, you know, give it a shot, you know. We'll set it up sometime a little differently and have you take a look at it and see what you think.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Are we okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whatever you want.
Okay, yeah, I'll find whatever.
I know, Mr. McCain, I understand but, you know, we're finding more and more, not just people who have come forward with firearms, but people who've been very aggressive towards, you know, elected bodies.
I'm not minimizing it. I'm just saying that I don't have a strong opinion either way. Whatever.
Well, since you're doing all this walking, you can jump over and you can take care of anybody.
Exactly. Feisty today.
Okay, we'll take a look at it and bring some ideas forward for what you think. And please share with me any configuration ideas that you had.
Okay.
They do in Martin County. They had speaker, you know, in front of...
Right in the center.
In front and center. One thing we do very well is we have the agendas out and we have the public input forms out. And, you know, so we're that at least people get in a routine of filling that information out, which is nice. But it's nice we have some flexibility
in
the room.
It seemed to me that we moved the podium away then once public input was over because it's a high podium.
Yes, and we did move the podium away.
Yeah.
I believe someone in the booth came and just took it and
pushed it to the side.
They just walked backwards with it, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
or pushed it back, one of the two. Yeah. Got it out of that. Because then quite often we do have presentations.
That's right.
Presentations before.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So there may be times when we need for it to be brought forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it should be very easy. I think maybe Mustang would make a wonderful fan of white.
Thankfully it does have wheels on it, right?
Yeah, staff has to have a place to come if we ask them for information on an agenda.
Staff
item.
Has never sat there.
No, I'm saying if you move the podium all the way back there, then we get to agenda items.
Yeah.
We might not
that's true.
Oh, that's very true.
That's true.
You have to play with some camera angles because in that corner it just may not be in anybody's
mind. We actually, originally, I think probably before you and I were elected, it was there. And that's when
you get the whole,
always on camera.
I'm just saying for staff, when staff needs to go forward, just maybe if it's over there instead of in the center part.
Yeah, we'll take a look at it and play with it.
I think it'd be very doable.
Yeah, I think so too.
Thanks, Mrs. Johnson. Mrs. Disney, you have anything else?
Yes. Okay, so Tallahassee, that was the next trip. And I noticed I'm kind of mixing up committee reports with the legislative report, but it just sort of keeps me from being redundant on a lot of things. First of all, I participated in the post-conference meeting, and our own Cheryl Conley got amazing marks on the post-evaluation.
Oh, good.
And many commented they'd like to have her again, and her scores were off the charts. Really, really, she was very well received. And I was a little concerned because if those of you who were there know that afterwards there were some questions that were asked, and then there wasn't time for the applause didn't happen because of the way the questions flowed. And
I thought
that was kind of awkward. But Cheryl, I talked to her about it, and she got it. She understood why it happened that way, and certainly the remarks and the scores were better than applause. So. That was really nice to see. You know that there are a couple of lawsuits. Do I need to go over the lawsuits? Are you guys up on that? On the lawsuits, like the Religious Freedom Amendment, which is now Amendment 8. You all are familiar. You all understand what's happening with that, or do I need to go over it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the constitutional reference of Article 1, Section 3 originally started, it was Amendment 7, and then it was heard in appeals, and it was said that it could be go on the ballot, but with some different wording, and the wording that the judge suggested was actually the same wording that Pam Bondi used for the revised amendment, so it goes forward with different wording, and those that are opposing it, including Florida School Board, are using Amendment 8 as the title and not Religious Freedom because it is so misleading. And so the job of the school board and those others that are opposing it is to make sure that people understand that it really isn't about religious freedom, that it's about attaching dollars to schools that are being held in religious churches and that. So it is going forward. And then the other lawsuit that we are involved in is the constitutionality of the fully funding education. And we signed on an amicus brief with that. And then it was the circuit court said, yes, it can go forward to the Supreme Court. And now there's an appeal coming forward from the state, not from the House side, but from the Senate side, saying that we do want to go forward and we do want to fight against this. So now that it is going forward in that direction, there isn't an amicus brief any longer. I guess we are an interested party, but no longer on the brief. So those two are going forward, and the charter school suit is still being held. Originally, the charter school suit was to argue the constitutionality of the standards being different for charter schools with the class size amendment than with traditional schools, and that's being held waiting on the decision about the penalties. Because the penalties were so great, and since the legislature has intervened and lowered the penalties, that suit is sort of stalled. The penalties right now are so small that there are many districts that are choosing to not follow the class size amendment because it's much cheaper. So the penalty originally took away your base student allocation and your class size funding. And the lawsuit says, well, sure, take away the class size funding because we didn't use it appropriately, but the base student allocation needs to stand because it's we're still teaching. We're still teaching the kids. So that's where Florida School Board stands with it. The meetings that I had, I focused on meeting with committee chairs rather than with our local representation because I can see them here. And I was able to meet with Senator Simmons from Education Appropriations as well as the House members that are on appropriation. The only senator I met with who wasn't part of appropriations or education was Senator Beniquisto. She's the one that has the parent trigger bill. And those things are likely to go forward despite the strong objection they're getting from school board members. The appropriations side is where it really gets interesting. You know, the governor's budget came out with this extra $1 billion that was going to go into education. And even our own local newspaper today is saying how wonderful that we're going to have all this extra money in education. But no matter which budget you look at, whether it comes to the House, the Senate, or the governor, this is how it kind of boils down. The education budget, third quarter calculation of last year, $16.5 billion. With the new budget, first thing they're going to do is remove the one-time transfer from a trust, which is $250 million. We're also going to have a reduction in our total local funds due to the lower property values of $285 million. So now the funds remaining after those revenue losses are $16 billion. Then you have the increase in the budget due to more students in the state. That's $200 million. You have $165 million to pay for the pending FRS increase to districts, not to employees, but to school districts. You have $500 million to replace the lost trust fund transfer and local revenue losses. Then you have the $156 million for school readiness that, depending on who you talk to, may be supplantable, may not be supplantable. So if it's going to be categorical, it doesn't really increase our budget. It's just another expense for something else that we have to do. So the balance remaining after all of those, that funding loss or those budget increases, is only $54 million for the whole state. Well, the federal money that we're losing from the Ed Jobs money is $554 million. So we're still $500 million in the hole in the districts across the state. So while this $1 billion is being touted as it's going to save our school districts, there isn't a net gain yet because of the increased expenses. So everybody needs to really be aware of that. As we go into budgeting, because now that the newspapers have published this, folks are going to be really surprised to hear that we're still going to have to cut things out of our district budgets. Okay. And that's really important for people to understand. I don't know how many different ways that we can say it, but it's going to be a surprise to people because of all the publicity. The reason for all the publicity of the increased $1 billion is because it's an election year. Every single seat is up for election this year, and that's why this is happening, because the Senate and the House both want to look like heroes, that they've saved education, when in fact we are still in the hole. So, yes.
And I'd like to mention that they decimated education in the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. Now we're getting into kind of an election year, and they're taking it from somewhere else to give it to education, so now healthcare. You know what I mean? So it's, I always kind of think it's like a shell game, but they have,
because it is.
Yeah, they basically decimated us over the last 4 years and now want to make it appear as though they're giving us something.
Yeah, I think we got a narrative from Mixon and Associates that explains this mm-hmm. so nicely. And I think that something, a document like that might be worth posting. You know, I don't know if you have to get permission or how that works, because the narrative really gives you that image of you're falling into
the one about the hole
or the ledge.
Yeah. And then you're in that hole and these things are moving you up.
Yeah.
But you have to get to the level at which you were and go beyond. And this is just bringing us up. And with FRS and the other issues, it keeps pushing us down. But everybody thinks, oh, you're getting a billion. That's wonderful. You shouldn't be complaining. But there's a lot of misunderstanding about these last years of defunding education. And something like this may help people really understand the implications.
And I do agree. That is probably the clearest explanation.
That narrative,
It was absolutely, and I do agree, it was wonderful. It is absolutely something that we should be, you know, making available to all of our schools. Our schools need, our individual sites are the ones who need to help get this word out.
Well, the thing that really painted a great picture for me was that we're at 2005-2006 funding levels, but we've got to do 2012 work with that, and so in those 7 years we have another $500 million in expenses. So, we'll get that out to everybody, that whole story.
And
you can distribute it as you wish. And then the very last statewide issue I have is Florida School Board Association Advocacy Committee came up with a resolution endorsing Teacher Appreciation Week. And I know that's not for a few months, but what I thought I would do is have Ms. Stang distribute it to everyone so you can take a look at it and see if there is any change you'd like to see that makes it more Indian River and less generic. And, you know, Teacher Appreciation Week will go on whether or not we do this, but to have a resolution, which is one of our, one of the strongest statements that a school board can make is a resolution. Having that go out and circulate and be distributed, in as many media outlets as we can, will be a great statement for us to make to our teachers. Okay.
Great. Somebody, sure.
Well, while you were up there, did you have any conversations about this bill, the one that involves sharing the capital outlay? What was your sense of where that's headed?
It sounds like it's going to happen. And despite talking to anybody who would listen about that, we have capital needs that are not going to be met because of a number of reasons. Our district happens to be in a better position than most districts. There are some districts that already have committed their capital funding up to 1.5 mils and have nothing left over for maintenance. And so without any PICO funding and then having to share that is really going to put them in a bad position. They're going to just wipe out any reserves that they have. Mr. Morrison did create some information to send it with Vern, and I had a copy of that, so as we traveled through and spoke to people, we were able to illustrate in a very real way what it means to Indian River County. But it is not likely that we're going to see a lot of change. There may be a little bit of committee substitute amendment stuff go on, but it's unlikely we're going to see any substantive change in that bill.
And I really would want to emphasize that the outcome of that bill will prevent any kind of construction, and we will be hard-pressed to do the maintenance that we need to do. It's a very devastating bill.
Yes.
I think some districts are upside down because of payback and debt that they have to do. Mm-hmm. So it's a scary deal.
Mm-hmm. It really is. There are districts... We thought in 2007 there were a lot of schools closing. There are districts that are closing 2 and 3 schools at a time now because they need the assets. They need the money that can come from those assets, and they can't maintain the buildings. We're not at the bottom yet.
Right. I think that's what that says too, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So my other thought is I have it, but I'd like to get that copy because I'm not sure what it is. But to the superintendent's parent advisory committee, to PTAs, to SACs, I mean, I think there's a group that we can get this information out to that, you know, just to keep them informed of.
And as far as ownership of the information, we might want to contact them and see
if we can adopt
that for education of our adult participants, teachers, mm-hmm. and SAC, and all of those things, and make certain that leadership at sites are aware of that.
And they send it out to all the districts that are affiliated with them.
I had something to add since we're on legislation, and I don't have a my last update was 2 weeks ago, and I was going to bring additional information, but this is probably a good time to bring this up. I don't know if superintendents are aware of the proposed amendment, constitutional amendment in the state of Georgia. It's being proposed. I understand it is as of 3 weeks ago, it was a reality. It was going to be on the budget and on the budget. On the ballot in the fall, and it will allow BSA to follow the student to private
full BSA
parochial charters. This will be precedent setting. It will be the it will actually be the first state in the nation if this indeed passes. As far as I know, there have been a couple of challenges proposed. I don't know where they're going, and that's why I'm just throwing it out there for information.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's rather scary. It was all over the news in Atlanta. I mean, it was, you know, almost any time you turned on the news, morning or evening, mm-hmm. You heard some sort of update on it and what the status was.
Yeah.
But that would be absolutely devastating if that hit Florida.
Well, and here, I mean, I appreciate you bringing that up, but our further legislation on what's happening with regard to allowing charter schools to, you know, basically go in anywhere under pretty much any rules, and the virtual, I mean, to me, this is accelerating the demise of public schools. I mean, I do believe they're dismantling, and I think it's becoming accelerated. When you say you can take all your money with you anywhere, that's basically what they're saying.
Oh, that's the other thing. Homeschools.
Sure.
Yeah. Homeschools. They were the other.
It is
part of it. It is
dismantling.
Very frightening when you think what could be happening. So when you were talking about closing mm-hmm. schools, they were already doing some projections. Even though a private school may charge twice as much for mm-hmm. a student, if you can take half of that tuition, mm-hmm. follows the student, and they know it's going to be coming from the state of Georgia directly to a private school, then certainly a parent's going to work very hard to make certain they can make up the difference or the other half of that. So.
Yeah, and I think that the other concern with that, too, is that there's absolutely no accountability. There was no accountability in terms of the quality of the education offered. The money just goes, no question back. And it's disheartening for public education.
So that was my cheerful report.
Welcome back. Icing to the cake.
Anything else to uplift our spirit?
Well, when it's my next turn, I'll go into federal stuff.
Can't wait for that. Mr. McCain, nothing. Ms. Simmons.
Yes. I also put grading policies on the agenda, and I had a lengthy meeting yesterday with Dr. Adams and Ms. Dale Bora, and I shared some of my concerns, and I think one thing that I didn't share, you know, as I was looking at the pupil progression plan, you know, one of the concerns that I do have is that we have in our pupil progression plan language for policies that are really not being used in this academic year, and I wonder if there isn't any way we can fix that so that our pupil progression mm-hmm. plan for whoever sees it actually reflects what those policies are for this academic year. So then, and we didn't really talk about that. But would I?
Well, let me address that first,
sure.
Because one of the things that we have been discussing really before, you know, that even came up is. The union came to me and asked if we, because of the implementation, you know, we were having a bumpy ride there, could we delay the implementation? So I was willing to not take everything away that we've done, but to delay it. And so what I have proposed to curriculum instruction is to highlight in the area to say it has been delayed, that implementation has been delayed until the 2000, like the work habits piece, you know, that we're not doing.
There are pieces
of it that we are absolutely not doing. And so I don't think there's anybody out there with the illusion that we are, but what it is an accurate statement to say that there are things that the board passed in the pupil progression plan that we have, in discussion with the union, agreed to delay until next school year. So what I'm proposing is that we highlight in the pupil progression plan that area that we really have agreed to delay on, and not take it out, but just right now say that it will be implemented in school year 2012-13.
And does that require, since the board approves the pupil progression plan, does any kind of modification require board approval, or can that be done without it having to be put on the agenda?
Suzanne said we should have board approval on that.
Okay.
So if the board is okay with that, I'll bring that to the next the meeting.
And then to follow along with that,
yes.
Because one of the things that has happened, we had to delay it because for numerous reasons, but I think one of the reasons was there was some lack of clarity as to what would be part of the academic grade and what would be part of the achievement grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had opportunities to talk to teachers, and there's still a lot of concern around things like accountability, meeting deadlines, plagiarizing, retakes, feeling that they're captive, teachers feeling that they may be captive to student behavior, you know, and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
There is just so much out there. And then I've had occasion to just randomly talk to some high school students, some of whom have no idea that these changes are being made, and some of whom are hearing rumors, and then those rumors are coming from their peers, from their teachers, and there's all kinds of misinformation. And then we haven't even addressed any concerns that parents may have. So, you know, in talking to Dr. Adams, I know that there is going to be a training in March, and there's going to be a PowerPoint presented that is going to address a lot of the misinformation around this. But I thought, you know, as a board, our responsibility when we approve these types of documents is to make sure that there is follow through and that they can realistically be accomplished. And I just, you know, wanted to have that conversation in terms of the way things are going right now. Is it realistic to expect that in the next academic year, all the work is going to be done so that teachers are on board with the understanding that this is, when you talk to teachers about grading and practices that are very, in many ways, you know, it's to their discretion. They're professionals. They understand how students learn, how to deliver their curriculum, how to assess their it's a very personal thing. So not all teachers, regardless of whatever training we do, are going to say, yes, that is what I believe, but many teachers that I have spoken to have said, if that is what is expected of me, I will do my best to comply and make it work, because that is what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I really respect that, because being a former teacher myself, I know how challenging this is. So we have to work with the teachers. I would think that as a board, we would want to make sure that there are opportunities for parents to have these conversations, and for students, not just putting it on a PowerPoint or saying it's been taped and, you know, here's a link, go see it. But I almost would feel like schools would have to have these conversations with their parents. So it seems to me like there is a lot of work to be done. And I just want to be assured that it is realistic that we are ready to roll this out. That, you know, when I called Volusia County, they did it piecemeal. You know, they didn't even develop policies. They had guidelines, because this is a lot of work. You know, has the district considered maybe doing it at the elementary and middle school level, since at the middle school level we have the EPIC program that supports a lot of this work? We don't have EPIC yet at the high school level, for example, that would support a lot of the consequences of this wonderful new approach to grading students. So there are a lot of uncertainties, and I would hate to see the board put in a situation again where we move forward making an amendment on this document and saying we're going to start in 2012-2013 and have that possibility that yet again, because of the complexity of this, we are not ready to move forward. So that's kind of in a nutshell where I'm coming from.
And I'm going to let them talk, but I will tell you I delayed it because the union came to me in an effort to work together and collaboratively. That's why we did it. This is research. What we're doing is good. The work that the process that is being done with regard to grading practices is good for our school district. It's good for students. It is good for teachers. What has happened over the last 2 years, and I want to go back and say we've been doing it for 2 years now. We talked to administrators for a year. We talked to teachers for a year. Now this is our third year in trying to bring it forward. The other thing that I will say, in my years in curriculum instruction, this is the most emotional conversation that we've ever had. Whether we've had it with administrators, whether we've had it with teachers, or whether we've had it with students, and we've had it with all three. We've brought it before the superintendent's student advisory committee and had good discussion, and we're not finished yet. What I agree with Mrs. Jimenez is that there still is work to be done, okay? Regardless of when you implement it, you're not going to have everybody on board. So it's just been last week that we had a meeting with Ms. Long and Ms. Collier here to talk about where we are in the process, what needs to be done, what kind of a timeline are we talking about, and what's feasible for next year. So we are continuing the work. We agree that there were some gaps. What we ended up finding out is there were gaps in information, that not everybody had all of the information that they needed. So there are a lot of myths, and they really are myths. So the next workshop is going to be about the myths, and I'm going to let the two of them talk to you about what some of the myths are, because you're probably hearing them too, you know, if you're talking with teachers, maybe somebody has talked to you. So I'd like you just to mention a couple of the things that are being discussed about what the district is requiring, but we still want teachers to grade students. What we're asking them to do is to grade students based on what students learn and not mix behaviors with grades. Okay, so that's kind of very underlying, but it still kind of gets to the essence of it. So we want to tell you a little bit about what some of the myths are and where we are in the process.
Thank you, Dr. Adams. Good afternoon, board. As Dr. Adams has stated, there were some gaps in the information that was being shared out, and so we're trying to correct that and make sure that we get proper information out there to the teachers, to the parents, and most especially to the students. So we have the two committees that we have were the Grading Practices Committee, and that committee has been in session for 2 years now, and this year we also came up with the Report Card Committee at the recommendation of the Grading Practices Committee, so that we would have report cards to go along with the new policies that we wanted to, practices that we wanted to put in place. And now we're going to be merging those two committees together starting next week. So just some background information for you. And you are correct, Mrs. Jimenez, when you say that there are myths out there. And in March, which we have our next session of training on grading practices, each individual school level, elementary, middle, and high school, we're focusing on dispelling the myths that are out there. And some of the myths that are out there, and we're working on the PowerPoints now, those committees are that no zeros will be allowed to be given. Well, that is a myth. You will still be able to give zeros because you are still have students that will not be doing their work. And you can't grade what you don't receive. However, a zero is detrimental to your GPA, as we all know. It's really hard to recoup from a zero. And a lot of parents don't get to see when students are missing those assignments. They just see a zero. They don't know why the zero came about. So in our grading system, eSimbler, there is a mechanism that you can utilize. Instead of putting a zero, you put an M, which means that the assignment is missing. It alerts the parent that the assignment is missing when they go on and access. And it also lets them know that, you know what, if my child makes up this assignment, they will have a grade there. So that zero will not stay. The zero is there, but it's not showing up as a zero. So you can still give zeros. And if you've given a student an opportunity to complete an assignment, and they complete the assignment and they don't get any of it right, they still get a zero. But they have an opportunity, hopefully, with that teacher to redo whatever it is that they did to show that they have mastery of the standard that they were working on.
Katie, tell them about homework.
Some of the other myths include homework, and one of the conversations is, you know, separating grades between academic achievement. What do you know about the standard? How do you perform on those standards-based assignments or questions or tasks that we give our students? And work habits, turning in assignments on time, bringing my pencil to class, you know, not talking during, you know, discussions, or I'm sorry, then, you know, when the teacher is giving a lesson or so forth. So one of the myths is homework. Am I allowed to, you know, I think there's a misconception that as a teacher I'm not allowed to grade homework. And so we want to have that conversation with teachers, and things to consider is if you are evaluating the homework and monitoring whether the student, you know, got the assignments correct, the answers correct or not, for accuracy, how they're performing on the standards, that's academic achievement. If you're just collecting a pile of papers and check, handing them back out, not looking at whether they answer them correctly or not, that's a work habit. It's, you know, turning it in on time versus what do you know about the standard. And so there's some misconceptions about, you know, am I allowed to collect homework? Am I not allowed to, you know, same with late work. Am I, I'm the district is telling me I'm supposed to collect late work. Well, no, the district has not created a policy on that. We would like teachers to develop a policy and put that in their syllabus at the beginning of the school year so that they can be consistent with all students, so that I maybe don't collect, you know, one student, allow them to turn in something late, and another maybe the next week I change my policy and say, no, we want to see fairness and consistency for students. And there's some other myths, you know, regarding, you know, I'm supposed to retest students. You know, again, that's at the teacher's discretion. So we want to clarify some of the myths on, you know, am I allowed to give zeros? What's the policy with homework, late work,
all of those,
retesting, and so forth?
Because there were no definitive things. You know, the teacher still has the autonomy to come up with the rules in their classroom on how they will collect and grade work.
And so what I would say, a lot of it is still the unknown for some teachers. That valuable discussion did not happen last year in a couple of places. So what you're doing is hearing what's going to happen instead of really being involved in the discussion of why the district is even talking about it. I think the real essence of all of this is grading students on what they've learned. Cheating and plagiarism, that's another one that comes up. You're not going to do, you know, a teacher can't do anything about cheating or plagiarism. And that's an emotional button, you know, to say, well, what do you mean? And so what we're saying is, we have an academic, in our student code of conduct, we have a statement of academic honesty. And a student has to sign it and send it back. That's a requirement. That's something that we actually have in our student code of conduct. And what it has in that academic honesty is, if a student is caught cheating, here are some of the things that you can consider doing. One of the things that we've heard is that, well, they might get signed a day of timeout, or they, you know, which has no meaning necessarily for the student. But in the academic policy, it has things like, what were some of them? Well, some of the ones that I can recall are, you can be taken out of extracurricular activities. You have to do things that are meaningful to students so that they're not going to cheat or plagiarize. But it's a behavior, not an academic learning. Ms. Collier was telling me that she had an English teacher in high school. She says, I never missed a test in that class because if you missed his test, you got two essay questions. And so one of the things that people will say is that you're putting extra work on us. Well, if somebody, one of the ways that I could deal with somebody that I caught not being honest is to give them, I have two essay questions ready for them. Okay, you can stay after class and do these. So we're not trying to put extra work on them. We're trying to not mix behavior and academic learning. And it's having that conversation. It's helping our teachers understand what the research says about it, what the best practices are. But we're not putting lots of policies into place. We're saying, base your grade on standards, what they are supposed to be learning, what your syllabus says that students are going to be learning. That's the other thing is, if you tell me ahead of time how I'm going to be graded, there's no guesswork in it. And that's something that I think a lot of teachers do, but I'm not sure that they all do. Okay, so it's a different way of thinking, and once we have the good emotional conversation, people come away with it with some greater understanding, and maybe they don't buy into all of it, but they have an understanding that, okay, here's what you're trying to do. Ms. Long called a couple of universities because one of the things that the committee came up with is we would like to have a work habit grade and a, don't mix them, but they're too important. I mean, people really feel like it is important to get the work done, to turn it in on time, to have it done, you know, the quality of work. Those are important behaviors for students to have. It's important behaviors for us to have, work ethic. So the work habit grade, does that have any meaning for colleges and universities? And I'll let you say who you called and what they said about it.
Yes, ma'am. I called the University of South Florida, University of Central Florida, University of Florida, a couple of them. And I spoke with the admissions counselors in a couple of those places. And one of the things that they said was that, yes, we would love to know that the grades that we are receiving and on transcripts are pure grades based on academic achievement. And they're not, the word that she used was inflated because of students doing extra credit things and things of that nature. And I can't remember her name right now, but I would get it for you. And she said she would be open to speaking to anyone sharing that. And one of the other, at one of the other universities, they said that they recalculate the grades as they come in anyway, but the grades that they receive on transcripts are just a portion. They look at ACT and SAT scores a lot heavier. And they've also found that some students that they have been admitting with high GPAs, they're finding that they have to go to remedial courses once they get to the college and university levels. So there's some glaring issues out there when it comes to how we're preparing students and their grades when it gets to the university level anyway, and how they are interpreting that and how they're utilizing it to find that, you know, all of the students aren't academically prepared as they would hope them to be once they get there. So, and it's going around. It's not just Indian River. Other districts are doing the same thing.
Did you want to add anything, Katie? Okay.
This is good learning. These are things that we should be doing as a district. We should be examining our practices all the time. Doesn't matter whether it's practices of the superintendent or the teacher, and I value the work that the teachers do. It's new learning for some. Some already automatically do it, but it's new learning, and you know, there are a lot of myths, so we want to clear up the myths, and we want to continue to move forward on this quest to have grades be meaningful and to be based on what students are actually learning. So one of the things that in our conversation with Mrs. Jimenez yesterday is I said I will commit to getting information out to parents before the end of the school year, because we want them to know that this discussion is going on. We want them to know that you know, that the school district is looking at some modifications on how students are graded. And we're talking about doing some notebook series on grading practices and bringing our community up to speed on where we've been over the last 2 years and what we're thinking about doing. And we want to have different groups of people presenting that information, not just administrators, but also have some others that have been involved, teachers that have been involved in this. So it is still a work in progress. There still is work to be done, but it's the work that we should be doing. The Educational Leadership Magazine, they devoted a whole magazine to grading practices. We've been sharing articles with teachers and doing staff development for 2 years on this. So we're going to, and it doesn't end. The other thing that I said to Mrs. Jimenez is, you know, once you change something, it doesn't end the learning. There are still pieces that you have to, you know, share with all the parties involved. So that's kind of where we are with grading practices.
You know, I'm going through college application process right now with my daughter, and some of the colleges she's applied to don't even ask the grade point average anymore. They want the transcript. They take and evaluate the class that you took.
That's right.
And they recalculate their own grade point average in order to figure out which kids, you know, so they can compare apples to apples with the kids that they're considering. And some of them don't even ask what your class ranking was. I guess they have the feeling that it is so varied across the country how grades are given and how what values different communities place on different behaviors that they're not able to get a good picture of who this student is by looking at it with our grades.
That's exactly right. And the reason that they value dual enrollment and even more advanced placement and international baccalaureate is because you're compared with other students around the globe that are taking the same test. So you're right, they re-weight the courses that the students have taken, because honors may be different in one high school than it is in the other, as it is in, you know, every other district. So there's no continuity, there's no consistency to that. So you're exactly right.
Yeah, and I just have a final question. I really do appreciate your making that effort to do that education for the parents. And I guess my final question would be, you know, what is the expectation of how students are going to be made aware of this? Because students are used to grades being used as a reward, a punishment. If you're late, this is the consequence, and it's the grade. If you don't, you know, and how do you change that? How do you work with them? Because they can come in the year when it's implemented, and all of a sudden, what they've done in elementary schools with all the treats and the rewards, in middle school with all the treats, and then all of a sudden they're in high school, and you have just shifted their world. And, you know, that's a concern, too, because I think I really believe that this is what we need to be doing, grading on achievement, not on little points and extra credits and things like that don't reflect achievement. But it's a really complex process. So what is the student piece of that, if you will? Because they need to be on board, too.
Right. And, you know, one of the things I'm going to do, and I thought of that as you were talking, is I'm going to ask the students. We have a great group of students, don't we?
Yes,
I mean,
they
are involved on this Superintendent's Advisory Committee. Very outspoken on a lot of issues. They're not afraid to hold back and let you know how they feel about things. And they probably would have some great ideas on how are you going to get that information out to the students and how can we best do it. I really think it's got to be broken down into small units. You can't do it big, you know. It's really got to be done at the classroom level. It's got to be done in talking about what the syllabus is going to look like from here out. And so I think that we've got to do it school by school, class by class. But I think those students, too, could help us with some ideas on that.
Anybody else? Thank you very much. It's helpful. Unless you want to do your
I have lots of stuff.
You want to be superintendent's evaluation?
Well, I'm afraid the ranking discussion is going to take a lot of discussion, and I would really rather we got on to the
Evaluation. Okay, so we'll move on.
And you haven't done anything yet, Justine.
I can speak to it now, or I can speak to it at the meeting tonight. The ranking.
Sorry.
As part of my own report.
Actually, if you'd speak to it tonight on camera,
okay.
That would be wonderful.
Okay.
And yeah, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Okay.
But I do have other things later.
Sure.
Oh, yes, I do. I have three more things after this. I have been a busy little girl.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny we're talking about it, and I meant to say one thing. The thing with the pupil progression plan that bothered me, but that troubled me the most, and we talked about it before, was that one, why there was such a disconnect at one particular school with the implementation of it. It seemed like that was where, do you feel that that's schools being addressed?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Because that seemed like where
yes.
a lot of this originated
yes.
from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And what happens is you have to have the group discussion, and they were putting it out in a different way
okay.
where people, the information was out there, but you had the opportunity to read it and look at it, where you have to have those emotional discussions. Teachers have to have the opportunity to sit and talk about it and share their opinions and share, you know, and dispel what we're trying to do. I mean, I think people are think you're trying to shove something down their throat that's not reasonable. And those myths come out of that. So, yes, I do feel like it's being addressed. And actually, we have several from that, you know, from those places that are part of the discussion now at the committee.
Yeah. Okay. okay. So we can move on to the evaluation instrument, and we had our meeting, and then. Mrs. DeGresta and I sat down and went through it, and thanks to her input, we made it cut down a lot and made it just a much more streamlined evaluation instrument. So with that being said, we'll revise it. Mrs. Johnson?
Page 7. I think, till I get to page 7, I couldn't be happier with what you've been able to accomplish. I would ask you to look at item B and C. Just as I would rather than talk about strengths and weaknesses, item B, my suggestion for verbiage would be area, parens, S, area or areas of greatest accomplishments this year, which deserve commendation, not strength or accomplishments. I'd like to just see strength or struck, and it read area, parens, S, because an individual board member may only have an area they feel is your greatest mm-hmm. accomplishment,
okay.
and some people may want to only emphasize one area, not that they don't think you have others, but
mm-hmm.
and okay. likewise, to be consistent in C, mm-hmm. area, parens, S, of greatest particular performance, which needs strengthening. I think that is a much more positive mm-hmm. statement than throwing out the word weakness
mm-hmm.
or throwing out the word strength.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a little word study. Mm-hmm. Just my comment. That's the only comment I have, Mr. Pegler. I think you did it.
Thanks.
You did your job.
That was really Mrs. DeGresta. Don't take credit for it.
When is that?
This is a May thing.
Yeah.
Right. This is an 18 thing.
Yeah, I think a great job was done. Thank you to the chair, Ms. DeGresta, for following through. I sent some comments, and I really appreciated that they were taken into consideration. I do have two areas that I would like to bring up. In the first section under dimension, where it talks about academic success, the Association of Curriculum Development, their lobbying arm, is really pushing at the federal level and with the administration to embrace a whole child approach to education, because I'm sure it's not news to us that this emphasis on testing, if we just look at that chart we got at our curriculum workshop that shows all of the tests that our students have to take throughout the year, the emphasis on testing is very concerning to parents, to teachers and even to children who are being stressed out by the number of hours they spend every academic year testing. And so when I look at the dimensions under academic success, I think that the only thing that is lacking is language that recognizes that even though our goal is undeniably academic achievement, I would like to see language in there that reflects the whole child approach, that we remember, that our superintendent remembers, that aside from the academic, the social, emotional, and physical well-being of children is important. And even if we think those things are irrelevant, think of all of the money we spend and all the business meetings where we fund people who provide social, emotional, and physical support to our students. So we actually do some of that, but I think that in part of the evaluation, that should be a consideration, because sometimes it's very easy to get caught in all the testing, and move these kids up, and we need 700 to pass here, and we forget that these are human beings, and we need to make sure that our policies and the work we do promote the whole child.
Mrs. Disney?
Thank you. Claudia, I totally think that that is a very important aspect of running the school district. But I'm wondering if you consider this, that while we've had a lot of conversation about it, and as a group we agree that that is something that we believe will help our students and we should place more emphasis on, it has not yet made it into any goals or strategic goals that we've had for the district. So I'm thinking, as I'm hearing you talk, that that's something we should put in the goals that we are going to do as a board very shortly, and then the following year have that in the evaluation so that the superintendent's had an opportunity a whole year to show us that she's taking that goal seriously.
That's great.
Great idea.
So you will bring that up on March
5th. I absolutely will.
You feel okay with that? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. One of the things that our principals, our administrators are going to be evaluated much like teachers in terms of having an evaluation system. And so actually they just presented to the Superintendent's Leadership Council some of the training they went to. And one of the things is it's kind of laid out the same way with dimensions and indicators. And the dimension under academic success, which they call student achievement, it kind of gives a definition of what that is. And so I wanted to read you the definition because it's kind of action-oriented. And it says that the focus is on leadership practices, which you guys talk about all the time. It's about leadership. So it's the focus is on leadership practices that impact prioritization and results for student achievement on priority learning goals. And again, it's that priority piece. Knowing what's important, understanding what's needed, and taking action that get results. So these are the indicators that you're saying that all or some reflect academic achievement or student achievement, academic success or student achievement. What I do like about this is just as a definition of what academic success means, it means that you're focusing on leadership practices. It's what's important, what are you going to do, and what's going to be the outcome. You know, so it's just kind of a nice definition of what. And that's what the principals are being held account to. And I'm not saying it's always all the same, because it's not. But I think you want me to focus on leadership practices. You want me to focus on getting results by knowing what's important, by understanding what's needed, and taking actions that get results. So I just think it kind of defines what you do in the indicators. If you're going to articulate high expectations, what is the priority? What are you going to do? And what are the results, you know, for student achievement? So it's up to you. I was just trying to put a little definition on academic success or student achievement. We can't do it for all the areas, but some of these. And it's up to you.
Those goals are so important. In order to complete this piece,
right.
Those goals are so important. And I hope you'll bring or share that verbiage with us for March.
I will.
Well, but I think it's a point well made, and I
by the very definition, I think, of all the dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
That's applicable to all the dimensions.
It is. And it kind of, you know, when operational, it says the focus is on, mine would be school district operations and leadership practices that integrate operations into an effective system of education. So it kind of defines what operational is. It's a school-wide leadership practices that integrate operations into a effective system of education. It's a broad statement that helps define what that dimension means.
And because it is a broad statement, I'm wondering if it doesn't need to be part of the description of the dimension areas that are several indicators which give guidance and taken collectively will give meaning. Well, that's a good statement. Then could we put something up here rather than with each of the individual dimensions?
Okay. What the it doesn't matter to me. This they call these domains instead of dimensions, but
well, I heard what you said as far as giving an explanation of academic success. And how your leadership would relate to that.
Right.
I could see it going two ways. I could see there being dimension academic success and then including a short statement.
Right.
I also don't want to see too much redundancy because then it'll lose its impact.
Yeah. And board, it doesn't matter to me either way.
No, but I like it.
I was just,
Equivalent of
the
mission
statement. It could be, and that's what I said. It could be up here at the very beginning somewhere.
You know, the role of the
preamble
is general.
Or knowing the role of the superintendent is to. How do you feel about that?
Since
the co-author, but maybe she can.
She needs because she had some other good points that we need to consider. What we're talking about.
And that starts it off on a positive note when I said it could go up here.
And I think it can work either way. That the discussion that I had with Dr. Adams and with Mr. Pegler separately about this document is we want to be sure that the board is all interpreting the document the same way. For instance, are you expecting in April, May, for Dr. Adams to have a notebook of data that addresses indicator 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, all the way through? Or are you looking for Dr. Adams to have examples of academic success and then some examples of effective board relations? We want to be sure that you're all interpreting this document and what your expectation of what this data will look like. So when you sit down with the data and your sheets, you fill them out and can sit down and have a discussion with the superintendent, and Mrs. Jimenez isn't thinking, I'm going to get 60 notebooks explaining all of this, and Mrs. Disney is thinking, I'm going to get one sheet of paper that summarizes the year for me. I want to be sure your expectations are kind of aligned.
I want a PowerPoint.
She wants it all digital.
We forgot to put
a baton
twirling. Was that one of the
fire
baton twirling?
Yeah.
And a split. And a split.
Cartwheel.
And I will ask you what she asked the commissioner. Do you want fire or not? Do you want fire batons or no?
Anyway.
I personally do not put much stock when I see a 3-4-5 page statement about everything that the superintendent has done or any employee has done. I'm not interested in that. I don't want to know. I don't, just like I appreciate that Dr. Adams has changed her Friday report to be just a very brief compilation of some of the highlights of her week. I don't want to see that. If I don't feel that from her discussions and from her input at business meetings, at workshops, you know, that's where I know what I learned so much today, just that very brief explanation of the policy that we went over. I just think I learned a lot about how her involvement is. I learned a lot because she knew the questions to ask her members of staff to explain to us. I do not want 6 notebooks, 7 notebooks, 10 notebooks. I just want a
I want to be able to evaluate based on what I think is important. And no matter how much information you give me, and no matter how many things you may document, I'm still going to evaluate on my interpretation of what job she has done with academic success. And it may be that 1.5 is extremely important to me with the integration of technology, and it may be that I'm not really considering that at all in my evaluation of this district's academic success. That's just my opinion.
But I guess I would still want to know, are you looking at these as examples of things that you can speak to and wanting me to, and then I can, you know, I might have some things that I think are really relevant that maybe aren't part of this, or, you know, one of the problems I would have is if technology were very important to you and I somehow didn't address it, and there are, you know, 8 or 10 things on here.
I don't want to sit here and check off each of these things, because then you're going to get an A+, you know.
Go ahead and submit it.
Okay, I think when we look at these indicators, like, for example, under academic success, I personally would expect that all of this is happening. I would not expect that there not be academic, you know, we could go through each of them. I think the way we previously had it, it was set up to just be a very vague guideline. And this is a tremendous improvement on that tool because it is very specific and very realistic. I also would not want 6 notebooks or even a PowerPoint when I speak to Dr. Adams. However, I would like, because we are each 5 different individuals who are going to evaluate from our 5 different perspectives, I think for me, it would be important when I have my conversation with Dr. Adams for me to see from her perspective, for example, under academic success, what are some of her personal assessments of what her academic success has been, because they may be different from what mine are. And if I'm just going by what I selected, like for me, technology was like the big thing, and that was not, it didn't come across, that would give me that opportunity to have that dialogue while recognizing that she excelled in other areas too. Because, you know, I've seen it, you know, with our previous evaluations, we're all over the place. You know, and it's fascinating. It's really fascinating. So I think that it's a give and take. It's going to be a conversation, but I would expect her to come prepared for each of the dimensions to share where she sees she's been successful, because it's a two-way street, mm-hmm. and it's not just about me. It's about the entire district. And she may have some insight that I'm, from my perspective, I didn't consider as an academic success, and I would hate to, you know, not allow that opportunity for that to come out. So I don't want 6 notebooks, but I would like some preparation. I would expect preparation, and I think that these are the guidelines that I would use to evaluate. Does that make sense to you?
Guidelines. Again, I think the real critical piece is, are you expecting something in every area, or do you want me to evaluate what I think has been, that I've done, as I look at these areas for this year in particular, you know, and in any given year, you're evaluating what you think are the most important things that you've done to contribute to academic success. Looking at these as ideas, but not putting 1.1, 1.2. Or should, so that's the question. Or do you want me in some way to be sure that I address each one of those areas? Because I thought you were putting these as examples, but not to be, think that there weren't lots of other areas under academic success that could be in there, right?
So I think, you know,
it's up to you.
Then I'll go to Mrs. Disney. I think, you know, in my opinion, some of these are objective and some of them are subjective. Mm-hmm. If, you know, 1.1 is a plan, have you developed and implemented a plan for improved student achievement as measured by standardized testing criteria related to accountability? You know, that's an objective. Is there a plan? Have you implemented something? Have you implemented an educational plan for the district, which includes school improvement plans for every school? Things like that. I would, you know, not necessarily have you present, but, you know, I would know that there's a plan and that you've implemented it or you're working on it, and you know, that...
Or am I monitoring and following up
exactly.
on those plans that we know are already in place?
But, you know, when they, we know you're working to analyze and update curriculums, mm-hmm. things like that. So I think if it's a, in my mind, if it's an objective standard that, you know, you've actually... Is there a plan in place? And, you know, do you have a procedure that we wouldn't create because, you know, from a policy standpoint, but that you're doing to make sure the district's running effectively, that, you know, I'm not going to evaluate whether it's a right or wrong plan necessarily because that's your call, but just to know that there's something that you're using for everyone, that's how I would look at it. Does that make sense or clarify?
For me, I think before we had bullet points rather than these numbers. Both then and now, and I do like these better, but both then and now, what they're meant to do is provide the definition of academic success. I think that's what these indicators do. For instance, it's not that the classroom is clean. It's not that the parents are happy. It's not that the school district's getting an A that defines academic success. It's these things under here are it's meant to direct us and focus us on what academic success is. And I don't expect you to give me something that addresses each and every point, but I would personally like to see your report to the board. What did we call it?
High impact was high.
What comes back to the board prior to your evaluation? It's given a name in the direction instruction sheet. To be more of an essay form that tells me why you think there's academic success in the district. You know, what you think you're doing that contributes to the academic success. And so when I sit down with you, I will have already read that. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about something like if I say, well, you know, I have a perceived weakness in one area or I, you know, really believe in something else, you know, some implementation of something you've done, but that conversation happens, and also to explain why I would rate with the number I did. I mean, I don't expect to see some report that tells me, well, for 1.1, I developed this plan and implemented that plan. That's not at all what I think this is. I think that's this is used to help define what academic success is. Okay?
But just a minute.
I think also, though, that going back to the comment that was made, some of these are very objective, you know, formulates procedures. I mean, those are things that we can see are in place at the district level. But when you talk about things like articulates and promotes high expectations for teaching and learning, that's something we see throughout the work that you do day in and day out as you deal with all the issues related mm-hmm. to academic success. So whatever those achievements are for that particular year, incorporate a lot of this, because you can't have the achievement if you don't have the appropriate plans, if you don't monitor the school improvement plans, if you don't analyze and use that MP2 data and get your teachers to use it and so on and so forth. So it's just guidelines. But, you know, some of this I would want to know, depending on the situation, you know, what is being done with some of these school improvement plans, especially the ones where schools are struggling. I would get into the weeds with that, because I expect you as a superintendent, if there is a school that is struggling, I would want during that academic year for you to tell me how, as the academic leader for the district, you are making sure that that school is improving because they're being challenged. So I would expect in some areas, depending on what's happening during that year, you know, I think it's very flexible. But I don't expect 1.1 in a narrative for each one.
I think part of it, too, is I would come, if you hadn't addressed something that was important to me, I'd come and say, Dr. Adams, mm-hmm. you know, can you tell me what kind of procedure mm-hmm. you've been using to gather and analyze district assessment data for your decision-making? You know, is that... part of it, too, is that we would, you know, converse about it in formulating the evaluation. So, you know, I don't know if that adds mm-hmm. any clarity to it, but I guess if you prepared something, a report, and then if people have additional questions or want to talk to you about it for specific information that we would all take it upon ourselves to do that before preparing the evaluation. Mrs. Johnson.
And I appreciate the comments both that Ms. Disney and Ms. Jimenez have made and regarding these indicators, because I do think with just bullets rather than indicator 1.5 being something we might talk about, I think for us to have a public meeting where you have given some sort of a narrative or an essay, if you will, of an overall. But when I get one-on-one with you is an opportunity for us to discuss some of these things that are bullet points. And when I said I thought the changes needed to be made on page 7 as far as wordsmithing a bit, I'm not too sure that we need to have 1.1. I kind of lean more to the comment that Ms. Disney said. We used to just have just little bullets beside those. Because this gives them an importance as a ranking, which I don't think any of us would want to do. Am I making myself clear? In other words, saying 1.1 develops and implements comprehensive plan for improved student achievement. That to me, if I am somebody looking at this document, 1.1 is probably the most important thing in this document. Is that not correct? And 1.7 is not necessarily. And I'm thinking 1.7. No, 1.7 is pretty darn important here. So I don't want to get bogged down in indicators. Yeah. I want to be looking at your performance, the evaluation of your performance. We have not set goals for you this first year. What we're talking about right now is going to need to be revised once we set goals for you. Because we cannot hold you accountable for something we have not given you accountability for.
Right. Indicators is a pretty common way, and indicators are indicators. These are things that show that student achievement or academic success is being accomplished. You know what I mean? So it's a pretty common language, but it's never intended, and I'm sure it isn't here, to indicate any prioritization, because one is 1.1 and one is 1.7. You know, indicators are usually, these are the kind of things that fall under academic success.
Numeration. Just my opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't know how anybody else feels.
Looks like the statutes.
Thank you.
Well, gee, I wonder why.
Yeah. And they didn't have this, but I'm looking at the...
Where's the capital A's and the little B's?
I'm looking at the Florida School Leader Assessment, and it's a multidimensional leadership assessment, and they have indicators.
Do they have bullets?
No, it's indicators.
The word is fine. It kind of looks like this.
Oh, but they do
1.1.
Yeah, they do.
Attorney.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing.
Attorney's, and we had two working on it.
Sorry.
And yeah, either way, I know what it means.
We got off of this. Does anyone have any problem with eliminating those words?
No, that's fine.
Thank you.
I didn't like the weakness word.
I think it sets a wrong tone, because a particular performance may need strengthening, but it doesn't mean it's necessarily a weakness.
Mm-hmm.
It just needs strengthening, and I think it's a much more positive approach to what we're looking at.
Mr. Greston, was there anything else that you thought we should consider about the evaluation instrument? Kind of.
The only other issue that we talked about was whether everyone was comfortable, and you've actually had a lot of that discussion already with how something will be measured. And a great example is the very first indicator in the first dimension, which specifically says this indicator will be measured by testing and other criteria. Are we comfortable that you have defined how you will measure the success of the superintendent, not in each indicator, but in each of the dimensions? Are you comfortable that we have enough information in the indicators that you feel that you will be able to clearly measure whether there has been, where you can place the superintendent in one of your rating scales?
Mr. Johnson.
Yes, but that's always going to be subject to the individual board member's interpretation of the performance.
Absolutely.
And I know Ms. Jimenez showed her concern about they were all over the place as far as the evaluations. Well,
You know, I've been involved in a lot of these, and they always are all over the place. They always are. And I think you can probably say in most counties that's the truth. Yes. And that's why you have five board members, because you need five different. You only need one board member if everybody's going to, you know, agree on everything that's being said.
Is everybody okay with that? Are there any other changes? Anything else you want us to modify?
And do you want to put that one sentence that Dr. Adams read off in the introductory paragraph?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Either preface it with our expectation of the superintendent would be to, or you all can words. I don't need to wordsmith that.
Okay.
I do the eliminations, not the.
Do you want to? Are we changing it to bullets, or does everybody want?
I'd like to see bullets rather than statutorial indicators.
Mr. McCain, what's your preference?
He's a numbers guy.
He's a numbers guy.
Numbers, bullets, cartoon ducks.
No cartoon.
We'll
Valentine's Day hearts.
Hearts. You're on.
Okay, so we'll change that to bullets, and we'll add the sentence, and then make the changes to the summary, page 7. And then if you see on the back.
That's your job.
So.
Yeah.
You do know that's your job.
Oh, okay. What
you need to go, yeah, you need to go back and look at what's been done prior to Mr. McCain. Mr. McCain lucked out last year.
Oh, because
he didn't have to do one.
Okay.
I would delegate it anyway.
Dr. Adams.
Okay. So then, if we agree this is when, this when it's going to be, when do I turn something into you, and when do I get evaluated? What's the timeline on that, then? I think Judy's given me some times before, but do you remember what they are?
Off the top of my head, no, but I
believe Ms. D.
May.
Has it. Dr. Adams.
So May, you turn it in, and then
it's in there.
And we can resend this out to everyone.
Okay. Submit individual assessments.
Yeah, this is when the assessment, the form will be distributed to board members. It's April 30, but I think it's actually in your contract.
It's in her contract.
That says, contract. I think you prior to the board doing this, you have to have submitted your report.
So ours are due April 30th.
Filling out a... This form will be distributed to you April 30th.
April 30th.
And then I think you have 2 weeks. May 11 is your deadline to submit your individual assessments.
And those go to
Stang.
The chairman.
This document says to Ms. Stang.
Okay.
And
okay.
I'm sure she
the
would
chairman
compile
does
it.
The
yes,
chairman.
She would compile
Ms.
it.
Ms. Stang does not do the compilation.
No. Yes, you are correct. She would just put the papers together in a folder and present it to the chairman. Yes. I apologize. I misspoke.
Okay. So I present it to the board by April 30th.
You need me to check
it out? Probably. It's, let's see, before the first day in May of each year, during the term of this agreement, the superintendent shall report to the school board her progress in meeting goals and performance objectives established as provided under subparagraph A above.
That makes sense.
Between May 1st and June 30th of each year, the school board shall review with the superintendent her progress in meeting the goals and objectives and the working relationships among the superintendent, school board, faculty, staff, and community. That's the timeline.
Mr. Chairman, I'm waiting to comment on this until Ms. Vivian is back in the room. Because of school grades, we did have that's 60 days from May 1st to June 30th. And I think we did that to try and get school grades in, and we don't have school grades as a consideration. They don't come in until after.
And the high school grades don't come until November.
Right.
So that's
a long period of time between the time that we do an evaluation. I'm sorry, before we have the information from you on May. We get our forms on April 30th. May 1st is when you're to have information to us, your report, quote unquote, essay, whatever we want to call it. And then that's 60 days. I thought we did that period because we were waiting for school grades. Is that not correct?
Well, that was for the bonus.
That was
That was for the bonus. Right. This was due by by the last board meeting in May. In the event that your contract was not going to be renewed, there was time to use the 30 days before the end of June.
But this says, May 1st to June 30th.
Between.
And so I don't think that's. I just think it's an awful lot of time. It's in her contract.
Her contract, page 18. Oh, but I think we could go ahead and just do it. We could all decide.
As soon as you're ready.
We're ready, we'll do it. Yeah. So maybe we just, as a board, say, we'll try and get it done by June 1st. So
that way it can be on a school.
Oh, sure.
That way it can be on a school board agenda in May, which is a good indicator for the closeout of the school year. And if we wait till June 30th to.
Right.
I don't think that's appropriate.
Because you want to set your goals then, and you need to do this in order to go forward with the goals.
Yeah.
And the superintendent shall be entitled to present a written response to any written unsatisfactory evaluations or evaluations which indicate a need for improvement. The extended and the sole discretion of the school board, the completion of the annual evaluation process may be extended in order to allow for the school district to receive the results of annually administered tests.
That's not
right.
That can't be a part of the equation any longer.
Okay. So that's page 18 of our contract.
Got it.
Yeah, and for the record, Dr. Adams does not receive a bonus, but that was a previous contract.
Right.
So I don't want anybody left thinking that
that's
part of your contract.
That's why I didn't want to have that discussion. So
thank you.
Second for them to approve your assessment. So
All right.
I'd like for you to look at the timeline. I think there's some inconsistencies in the timeline.
Yeah, second meeting in May, right?
Yeah,
right.
The last time you spoke about dates, I think we actually had a calendar in front of us, and you had selected May 22nd as the date for you to approve the superintendent's assessment. So, and I think the only other deadline that I'll add into this list that you've previously created is the deadline for the superintendent's annual report is due to the board by May 1. That way we've kind of got the laundry list of everything that has to do with the evaluation piece on one document.
Thank you.
I'll just add it in.
Great, thank you.
Dr. Adams, are you comfortable with
that? I am.
Is it okay?
I am.
And I know that's very hard because we have set no goals from you except for that huge goal of being our new superintendent.
Yeah. No, I think this is, I think the areas are appropriate. I think this is a good document. And I always think that it should be a dynamic document, that as we find that things aren't working, that this didn't really measure what you wanted, then you have the opportunity to tweak it, to change it, whatever.
And it will. I guarantee you it will be different next year. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you it will be. Just by the nature of where we will be.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so we'll make the changes and get that ready for everyone to use. Okay, 247. Who else?
I have a couple of things that I think are, if you don't mind. One is the name for Thompson.
Okay.
I'd like to talk a little bit about that, if you will. There's been, I was contacted by Mr. Jim Thompson, and he and I actually had a meeting. I've had some discussion at the Superintendent's Leadership Council. I emailed all of you an idea that we had. I only heard back that it was okay from a couple of people, but I did meet with Mr. Thompson, and I told him what the suggestion was, but I said the board is the group that makes any final decision. And I've looked up the board rule on existing facilities and what has to be done, and it most often speaks to a school, and what the process is at a school when you're going to do something. But the suggestion was is to rename the district offices, the J.A. Thompson Administrative Complex, School District of Indian River County, and naming the administrative complex. He was a superintendent for how many years? 21 years, over 20 years, which is pretty, he certainly did make an impact in the community. Mr. Thompson knows the procedure in terms of the board makes the final decision, but he was very happy and satisfied that if the board would entertain the idea of doing something like that. So I wanted to put it before you now to see how you felt about it, and are you comfortable with me moving forward to bring something to the board for a recommendation?
I've always thought that was more appropriate than an individual school anyway. I mean, it makes much more sense. And you're right, Mr. Thompson was a very big part of our community. In fact, I assume everybody knows, but even the Little League Field behind Rosewood is the Thompson, J. Thompson Little League Field.
It was funny, Mr. Thompson, Jim, came in wearing a Thompson t-shirt. Mm-hmm. He said, my daughter told me to wear my Thompson t-shirt. But he was very, very
I spoke to him on the phone.
Fine with that. Yeah.
He calls me.
Yeah.
He used to umpire games out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At the high school.
It's a great thing.
I like the idea of the administrative complex being named that. I know that there have been some discussion of renaming the media center. He was not a media guy. He was a very hands-on.
Yeah.
Cared tremendously about children.
Mm-hmm.
But he was coach. I mean, that's who he was. I didn't know him when he was superintendent. But I do know that he had a wonderful reputation as far as all of that is concerned. But I like the idea of the administrative complex having some recognition.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's perfectly appropriate. It shows respect for the situation. And I would be very much in favor of that. I think that's a good solution. And it actually, as Mr. McCain said, is more appropriate for the position he held.
Yeah. The thought of something at Thompson to kind of carry on the name was because the family was very involved at Thompson. They volunteered, over the years they've played a role, at Thompson. So we were thought to leave his mark there in some way. It didn't have to be the media center, but we were trying to think of a way that we could still honor him in some way for the school that was named after him for so many years. So that was the thought, with that. So.
Yeah, just the bronze out there on the front.
Well, my thought is we do have the vanity plaque. I think the vanity plaque should remain on the school. Put my name on it. But, I'm telling you my personal agenda. I know my one shortcoming, but but I do think that it's important in honoring Osceola that we also include a new, maybe see if we can't get the old plaque off of Osceola School, move it out there, and then a new rededication plaque. Those things are not that expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that
for Osceola,
we need keep the Thompson plaque. We can put the old Osceola plaque up there, and then a new recognition of the repurposing of that school. I want to know what the plans are for getting Thompson off of the hallway. That's going to be
we're retiling
that's
that.
Huge.
Yeah, actually, that's part huge. Of the administration had already been retiled, and we're finishing that hallway.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
You're right. That would be very unacceptable.
You call
Osceola.
Him when you walk in there, and he goes.
Yeah, no, that was already in the works.
I think it's a great idea. The only thing I felt badly about is that at some point in the next few years, we're going to be leaving, I anticipate we'll be leaving this building.
Yeah.
You can carry the name.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought. Wherever your administrative center is, that's
the temporary thing.
Yeah.
Hope, I'd like for us to remember.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of us will still be on the board.
Could we do a resolution that would be in perpetuity for the school district's administrative building?
Just people to understand
Thompson.
The intent when we leave here that the idea is to carry that forward.
Yes.
Would a resolution be appropriate, Ms. Seacrest?
You can certainly do a resolution since it's not a school, it's an administrative building. You can certainly do a resolution, understanding that a future board can decide to change the name.
Well, of course, they can have their own resolution.
Yes. But yes, a resolution is certainly appropriate.
Okay, so that was one thing. The other thing is I do want to talk a little bit about Teacher of the Gala that's coming.
Oh.
So to kind of give you an idea of how it's all going to work. They're going to have in the front row, of course, they'll have the board members there. There is a big change in how it's going to be done, and I'm not going to tell you anything else, but I think you're going to enjoy it,
Yes.
That's a change.
Only by resolution, and it's not passing.
And actually, nobody's sitting on the stage.
Okay.
Nobody's sitting on the stage.
So what time does he have to be at Vero Beach High School?
No, it's at Sebastian River High School. Let's start with that.
Wow.
And Matt, you need to be there 5:30.
It's on my calendar.
Wow.
But it starts at 6:30, and they have front row seats. They have a designated area. And actually, they're going to have two podiums. And Mr. Pegler is going to be on podium 2 when you come up, and you'll come up right through the center. I think you'll come up through the center. They're going
to
have the stairs in the center.
And so
facing the stage, you're going to be on the right-hand side. That's podium 2.
That's the presidential mark.
I recognize.
So we're going to have students there. So just to give you an idea that we're going to have the presentation of the colors, we're going to have the invocation, and then we're going to have the Teachers of the Year and the principal are coming like this way and down. And then we're having the Osceola Drum Ensemble and an honors chorus where students from every elementary school are going to be there to sing.
So you don't say anything about it?
Not
the
rest
part
of it.
Embarrasses us.
That's right. Well, no, but basically this time they're not having people on the stage, so that's a big change.
Yeah.
Okay,
and they're not giving the speeches.
Okay.
I'm going to
welcome, and then you're going to also greet the students
after me.
Yeah. We'll talk about, do you want me to introduce the board members, or do you want to introduce them? I'm going to go first, so in the welcome. Okay, so I'll introduce the board members, and then you can greet the audience.
That's your job.
Okay.
That's the chairman's job.
You don't want to be seen with us.
excuse me, what is the proper procedure? What is protocol?
The chairman should introduce their fellow board members.
Okay. Consider it done.
He represents us. He's the official representative.
Okay.
So when Taxpayers Association wants to have some kind of a gripe session, then he represents us.
Plus they call her now.
Young.
Yes.
He does? It's not.
I just came from there last week.
So they liked her.
And
he's the number stone.
Yeah. Well, so I'll have to tell you what the comments.
I'm excited about change.
And the reception is in the cafeteria, and it takes place. So I'm really excited about it.
Some flexible time if we are not.
Yes. It's 5:30 to 6:30.
We're just there to mingle.
Yes.
But we have to be in our seats at 6:30.
But then here's one other really important thing. Is all the board members are going to be on the stage to shake the hands of, this is important, the Teachers of the Year and the principals are going to come out. We're all going to be on the stage for that, standing, and when you're going to shake their hand of the Teachers of the Year, and then they'll come over and stand with the principal, and a picture will be taken of all of us for each Teacher of the Year.
Okay,
so they're going to come across, shake everybody's hand, stand at the end with their principal, and a picture will be taken of the entire group for each one. And then the principal and the teacher will exit down the center stairs. Okay,
so
they're kind of coming in like this.
And we will go and sit down.
That's right. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I like change. I think this is
really
nice.
I give them a lot of credit for.
We're coming on the stage from the wings, going down the center.
I think you're going. Now you can do it either way.
Would you rather? Don't want to go up the center.
Okay, because they're a little steep.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So.
It's 2:58.
I've been at that high school. I've had a student at that high school since 2000.
So board members.
So I'm really aware of what works and what doesn't.
When you see the teachers and the principals lining up, you've got to be up there too, because you're going to be out on the stage before they get called. Okay.
Stage left or stage right?
I don't care. You guys decide. Okay.
They're each taking a picture with all of us.
With everybody, yeah.
Last year they got stuck with him. was just him.
Yeah, no, it's everybody, including the principal this time. So,
and that's good.
Yeah.
And all principals will be there this time.
I hope so.
Unlike the employee of the year.
Yeah. Aww. I hope so.
That was my dig.
All right, so those were the two things that I wanted to bring up today.
Okay,
well, we can go for a little bit.
Okay, who's
turning
it? That was,
who was
that?
That was, we went with me, so we're back. We got it.
I thought I was going to get to dismiss you.
Mrs. Johnson.
We haven't had enough time together.
Yeah, I know. It's like 5 years.
Okay,
it's been a while.
I'm going to combine my 3 in 1.
Ooh.
Wow. Yeah, this is simple, yes or no answers. We have the next information session set for April 3rd, 9 to 3. Then we have executive session from 4 to 6. Does anybody have a problem with April 3rd? I'm looking at Mr. McCain.
Yeah.
Well, you said you have the date.
Yeah, I'll be there. I mean, if all it's right. Set, I'll be there.
Okay. All right.
I may not be happy.
I will make sure.
Okay.
Okay. All right. And the next is, and I already gave the superintendent a heads up on the last two things. One is, where are we with the principal for Osceola? You said somebody was going to be on board for the last month of the school year. And your Friday update, continuity of graduations, you said you met with both principals.
I did.
Of the high school.
Now, I didn't say that somebody was going to be in place for the last month of the school year. Here's what I did say. That we are going to, once spring break is over, we'll begin the advertising for the principal. Ms. Roberts is not finished till August. The principal will have a chance to work with the Ms. Roberts for the summer.
You did say that.
Okay, Now, I would like to, if at all possible, have the principal in before the teachers go home so they have a chance to meet that person and, you know, get to know them. And then that person will have, you know, mostly all of June, July, and August to work with her.
There could be a SAC committee meeting to.
And we are going to send HR over to talk with the staff on characteristics, you know, usually go over. And I was at their SAC meeting, and we said a SAC representative could be there, a PTA representative could be there to give input to HR about the, you know, the type of leader characteristics that are important to them. And then
continuity of graduation.
And then graduation, I met with the two principals last Thursday after the principals' meeting. They are actually working together. What I two important things I said to them is, number one, the superintendent announces the graduates. Second of all, that we do want board members to shake hands with everybody because we don't like the antics coming across the stage. So if we could just spread people across the stage, and they were both fine with that.
Thank you.
Mrs. Disney.
Thank you. Washington, D.C., that's where we are. You know, what strikes me every time I go to the national, you know, to any event where there's some national school board members there, is just the difference between us, Florida, and the rest of the country. For instance, they're still spending a great deal of time talking about early childhood education and whether or not they should have 4-year-olds go to school. You know, they're still in that conversation, and we've been doing it for how many years? They're still getting their feet wet with Common Core standards, where Florida's had enough representatives from our school boards working on those committees that we've been kept very well abreast of what's happening with Common Core standards. So we really are, you know, leading the charge in a number of things. They talked a good deal about how Florida's FCAT test is so difficult, and how by national standards we are in the upper quartile of difficulty in the test. So that when we are ranked in the nation, you know, if we're ranked down low because of our grades on FCAT, it's not a true reflection about where Florida actually is, because our FCAT test is so much more difficult than it is in many parts of the country. So it was really nice to get that kind of, you know, recognition that they do know how hard Florida's testing is. So when I went there, there were really my primary goal was
to follow up with the House Education Committee and the Senate Education Committee that I had met with in September. Because having that continuity of the same face and the same message going before the staff in Washington is really important. It establishes a relationship where you become the source of information. They start coming to you for information as they're drafting bills. And as you recall, the last time I was up there, the message was that we needed to keep school board decisions local. We needed federal government to have less involvement in education, and we needed to address the AYP and the accountability standards, because there was the one-size-fits-all test that was not an accurate representation about what was going on in our schools. So in the major points of both the House and the Senate bills, the drafts of ESEA, they actually address for local school districts to have more flexibility to make educationally sound decisions for their school districts. They address replacing the accountability system because it doesn't accurately or fully report student achievement. They talk about high-quality, valid, and reliable assessments for all students and not using one method of measurement. They talk about facilitating strategic interventions for school districts, you know, for failing students and failing schools. And they absolutely agree. And I spoke to not just staff on this, but I spoke to Senator Cox and, or Fox and Senator Thompson and Senator Rowe, and they say that the accountability, the AYP system, will not come back in the current form at all. So where they differ, and you know, I just told you about where they're like, where they really differ is the House wants to withdraw federal involvement in education, but along with it, they want to withdraw funding, and they want to pull back 10% over 10 years until you're down to nothing. The Senate wants to be fully involved and fully engaged in education in the states, and of course, the payoff for that is that you keep the federal funding. So that's where they have the two, that's where the differences are. If we get all these things in the bill that they've talked about, it's a good thing. I guess you could look at it. It's a good thing either way, because we'll either have the money or they won't be involved. So one way or the other, I guess it's a good thing. But the important part is that they are really recognizing that the decisions made at the local level are best for students, and they're really recognizing that the AYP system doesn't work. That where once upon a time No Child Left Behind was designed because there were so many failing schools and so many schools that were deciding as soon as a child stepped in the door, they were deciding whether children could learn or not. That is going away because of looking at each child individually. And there will probably always be pockets in the country that have that problem, but by focusing on DNF schools, I think they're going to be able to address that problem. You know, when you have a district like Indian River County that's all A and B schools, and you're still using that same measure of accountability, it's just really not, it's just not relevant. Now, the waiver process, we were one of 10 states that was given the waiver where, because we have differentiated accountability here in Florida, we're probably not going to feel the full relief that the other states have, but we were granted that waiver. So we are encouraging the ESEA bill to be approved this session. I know that we said that last year and the year before, and since 2008 we've been saying that. But hopefully, because there's so much agreement on so much of the bill, we can at least get a partial draft approved by both chambers. And let's see, what else? We also talked about federal funding, and initially National School Board Association had reported to all of us that there was going to be an increase in Title I funding, and I think I had brought that information to you. But actually, the President's budget and now both chambers' budgets show flat funding for Title I. So that's the good news is it's not less than, but it's not going to be the increase we had hoped for. And then with IDEA, again, you know, we also, every time we go there, say, please fund us at the level that you promised. And, you know, that remains to be seen with all the politics going on with the upcoming presidential election, what happens with that. That's where we are.
Do they have a question about the FSBA conference?
Yes.
We were talking about Cheryl's reviews. Do they look at the reviews of the, like, the presenters and everything?
Yes, they
okay.
do. And they actually...
Well, go back to my friend.
I knew that's where you were going with this.
He made an impact.
Because it was so bad. Do they you know, it's frustrating because we go there and the year before the presentations were phenomenal, the workshops and everything.
Yeah.
And I know you're going to be on the executive committee again. So they look at those reviews. They're not going to offer it again next year.
They actually give us, the executive committee, a report of the average point that was assigned to each workshop, each speaker, each breakout session, and they give us the comments, the written comments, so that we can see what the comments were about things. And we've already talked about who the speakers are going to be. Each president kind of has their own theme, and then they go with that theme to try to have speakers that sort of fit in with that theme. And I'm drawing a total blank on who they are coming up for the spring, but they take into consideration everybody's comments. They really do.
The workshops. Claudia's was great with Mr. Land, and it was. But they didn't have as much of an assortment, I guess, this year. I felt like so.
Well, there was a different. It was arranged differently. Where I think at one. Before, they had a formula for how they would do the breakout sessions and how many general sessions and all this, and they changed that up a little bit this year, and I think what they found was that there wasn't enough variety of people by changing it up. But, you know, part of it's a function of how many rooms are available, mm-hmm. and that is largely in part to how many people are attending, how many rooms that you're given for the conference, and the attendance was down a little bit. Mm-hmm. It seemed like there were a lot of people there, but there weren't as many full time. Many of the people that were there were actually vendors, where instead of paying the $2,500 vendor fee and just setting up out in the lobby, they were just coming as participants. They paid the participant fee so that they'd be able to just mingle with,
like your friend. Yeah.
I said it the wrong way when I said many of them, because it wasn't many. I mean, it wasn't a large percentage of the attendees as vendors, but that made the numbers look a little bit bigger than they were.
Sorry, I mean, I just thought about it when you were talking about
it's good questions. And part of the conversation is about value. It's about making sure that board members aren't wasting their money.
That's right.
You know, you go, we set aside the week or whatever to go, and so she needs to do it next time.
So we talked about reducing the days and making them a little longer, because that does make it less expensive for people to go.
Just along those lines, we have the workshop coming up again at the end of the year, and we had a cut in our budget for school board, and I don't have funds again. I'm in that same situation. So if anybody is not going, and they can, you know, share their
funds.
I gave
you mine last.
I know you did. I mean, it's hard.
And
it's fine. But I just want to put it out there, because I serve on a committee, and it's, I mean, I can just not go. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, make sure.
No, I have some kids in college. This is just not something that I can.
I tell people it costs money to pay a school for that.
No kidding.
It really does.
So anyway, but if someone's not using it, otherwise I would just drive the day of and come back, which is no problem.
And we're going to take committee day and make it a virtual type.
That's great.
Day, except for the legislative committee, we have to be together to but the other committees will meet, you know, camera. Yeah.
Webinar.
Mrs. Johnson.
I kind of put the chairman on the spot last week because, and I'm sure I should have asked Ms. Stang or I should have looked it up myself. On our list of meetings, traditionally we don't have only one meeting in March, and we only have one meeting in March. I didn't know
spring the board.
Last year we had spring break, but we had a meeting the Tuesday before and a meeting the Tuesday after. And because spring break happens to fall in that week,
bless you.
So I just wanted to make sure everyone was aware that we're not going to meet from February 28th to March 27th. And I didn't know if maybe we wanted to break ranks and move that meeting.
The first Tuesday?
I'm sorry?
Of March?
No.
Because the second week is of spring break.
Second Tuesday is spring break.
That's what I'm saying. Well, it says do it the first. If we have business that we need to get to, do it the first.
I'm asking the superintendent. I mean, if she, I just think that's a long. We're only required by law to have one. Isn't
right.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
So, but I'm wondering about her trying to get her business done.
Let me take it to, if you don't mind, let me take it to the superintendent's leadership council to see what some upcoming things are.
And I would really appreciate
that,
staying checking and giving us an email, shooting us an email with the list of meetings on it. You know, we approve that at the end of every year.
Yeah. And that's March 3rd, right?
I'm sorry, at the beginning. Yeah. I'm sorry. At the reorganization meeting, we approve our list of meeting dates, and I didn't have easy access to that. So, but I'm just hoping that that's all that you feel we need.
Yeah, I will double check with them because sometimes we have
a Neola and everything else. We just have a lot going on. So.
And Mrs. Stang did email us to remind us that we only had that one meeting. So
personnel, so that's the only thing that I don't worry. You know,
I will check that out. Yeah. I appreciate
whatever
bringing
you
that
think.
Up.
Yeah,
because I just wanted to make sure that the board chair was aware of what was not there.
Mr. McCain, are you sure? Yeah, something.
Come on.
Does anybody else have any?
Yeah, I do. I attended the wellness committee meeting because Ms. Disney was not in town, and she's gone to some of these meetings. And one of the things that came up at that meeting was there was a question from the committee if the board would entertain the possibility of having a liaison to that committee, which is something we currently don't have. We go because we are interested in following up, and you know, I think that with all the changes in the nutrition bill and with the new leadership that we have, it may not be a bad idea to just, instead of it being when you can attend, that you may have a liaison. So I promised them that I would bring it up so that the board could entertain their question about us having a liaison.
Who's chairing that committee right now?
They're kind of rudderless right now because it used to be.
Because I wondered, because Mr. McClarty is just coming on board now. He will be at the meeting tonight to introduce you.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, my experience with that committee is that they really are thirsty for information. That any time I go, they ask me to speak and tell them, you know, what's happening in the district, and they're very concerned about making sure we know, we understand what the impacts are. And it's been good to go because they know we have actually been paying attention to some of the issues that they deal with in schools. The, you know, the teachers who have to give medication, the obesity rate, the you know, nutrition in schools, that they want us to know their kids without health care. You know, there's information that they're concerned that we don't understand and don't know. So when we go and we're able to address it right then and there, it actually helps them move the committee on instead of having to stop and wait and gather that information. If the board member's there to say yes, we have talked about EpiPens. It's been a while, but we did talk about it. So.
So I think it's great. If you feel that having a liaison on there would be helpful, then we can have someone
so does
to
it
do
mean,
it.
You know, I mean, no, I'm just asking because we have a list of who's a liaison,
right.
You know, who's a voting member, not voting member of different groups. So I don't know what the procedure is if we want to formalize it so that, you know, it's something that's ongoing, not just...
Well, I think we'd have to agenda it.
Okay.
So is that correct, Ms. Deaver? So we'd have to agenda it, and we would set, if they want you want a board member to be a voting member, or if they don't, I think that would be their call, not our call.
Okay.
That's their, if they're committed.
Okay.
So, but we have to agenda it and approve the person.
And I'm making this minutes. All fair?
So do I.
We don't take action. We didn't notice this meeting.
And, you know, maybe Mr. McLarty will bring something new to the table.
Yeah,
he comes from, you know, a large district.
Be.
I think we need to give them a chance to get reorganized.
Especially since you said they've been kind of rudderless.
Yeah.
It may take just a breath of fresh air.
So I made a note to talk with him, you know, about that, too. So, yeah.
One last thing. Dr. Adams, could you ask, and I should have asked this morning, Mr. Chuma, could you put together a list of the dates for the when he believes he'll be making recommendations for the insurance, for the health, you know, the wellness clinic?
Right.
I feel like we, you know, just so we have an idea of where things are.
Okay. I think it goes, when's the 17th? It goes on this. It goes out the 17th. It goes on the street the 17th.
Friday.
We will.
Okay. Yeah, because I lose track, and then somebody asked me, and I can't remember where we are in the process.
Okay.
This is Disney.
Yeah, just I didn't feel like we finished that last conversation. So we're just going to informally cover it until we see, until things stabilize with the new food service director.
That's okay.
So we'll just see who's available.
Right.
And
sounds great. Anybody else? Mr. McCain? All right. See you at 6.
Oh, did you go to that?
Yes.
Oh.
Very helpful.
It was good, isn't it? I mean, it's... good strategies. I think all content teachers, you know, it applies to everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, good.
They got out at 2:30. I was in the building. I might as well stop by.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you went.
Sad I missed the graded practices at Mitchell.
Yeah.
I'll listen to it as soon as it's online.
I'm sure you will.
School board meetings in March. We're going to have a vote on ratification. Let me think about that. For the contract after the hearing.
Okay.
Because if you're not going to be able to vote on it to the end of March, that's that much longer that you have to wait to implement.
You don't have to do it.
Okay.
I just have great concern with this. I just see so much that's going on.
And just an FYI, I was just on the Miami Herald and voted. There's a question to Mayor Himmel about funding of the...
No.
Yes.
50%.
Funding of the what?
The question is the legislature wants to charter schools to share public school construction funding. Do you agree that you're supposed to vote, yes or no? And we're up to yeses at 1,634.47% and noes at 1,844.
Now, who are they asking there?
Well, this is the Miami Herald.
Oh, okay.
So it's just, you know, a little informal poll, so I'll send it to you.
Are you going to make sure your teachers know?
I can't do it to the school email unless you let me.
But I'll send it to you. Thank you.
Mr. McCain
I will do that.
Mr. McCain suggested that we might want to look at...
Maybe I meant it wrong.
Yeah, I think it was pretty...
Here's spring break.
Right.
He said we might want to look at this as a school board meeting date. We have a budget session, we have a round table, and we have negotiations.
Yeah.
If we can do negotiations up here, we're already saying we're going to do something until 6 o'clock. Why couldn't we go ahead and do it then?
That's March 6?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
It's just my suggestion.
All right.
Which day, Karen?
Tuesday, March 6.
That's the Tuesday before spring break. It'll be the 1st and the 4th instead of the 2nd and 4th, right?
Now, the only problem with that is we would have a meeting the